Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 329 for comics originally released on November 27th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Catwoman number 25. Now, this is part of the zero-year banner event stuff where each story is telling, you know, where some of these other characters were 6 years ago during the Batman zero-year storyline events. Have you been reading Catwoman the whole time, on and off? What's your history with Catwoman?
I started back in the launch.
Okay.
Lost interest. Dipped back in for the Joker's daughter stuff.
Uh-huh.
Super disappointed and ran away. And then I popped back in for this one.
What did you think of this one?
Oh, I liked it.
Okay, good, good. Because that'll counterbalance my thoughts then. I didn't think this was bad, but it pushed a couple of buttons with me that did not favorably impress me. The thing's taking place 6 years ago. Okay, fine. Not a problem.
But she doesn't have short hair. I don't know how they pulled that off.
Yeah, exactly. It's so confusing. But we go through that opening scene, and then after the two-page title splash, which is very nice, we flash back to 9 hours earlier. And then immediately flash back another 2 minutes. And then throughout the rest of the story, we're jumping between the quote-unquote now and the then. All the now and then is still 6 years ago. And that kind of storytelling is a technique I don't particularly like or love at all.
Right.
Because it seems like if you had just put the story in chronological order, I mean, that you've got weaknesses you're kind of hiding. And I don't think it's a particularly weak story, but I also don't think it's a particularly inspired story. What were your thoughts on that? Did that even faze you at all? Did you notice?
You know, I didn't. It did not affect me the way it affected you. I was along for the ride.
Okay.
I really enjoyed the early genesis of her character development and righting wrongs and robbing from the rich and giving to the poor and how that all began, and you could see that, and I thought it was really well drawn. I think the way this was written and the dialogue is night and day different from with John Layman at the helm than with Ann Nesenta, and mm-hmm. I like it a lot better. And unfortunately, I think this is just a one shot that he's doing, and he won't be around. But I really had a lot of fun with it, and I mean, it was, you know, to shoehorn it into this 0 year thing, they kind of, you know, had to, you know, the batteries and all that weird stuff that was going on. But I enjoyed it. I really liked. I liked the action. I liked the story. I liked her a lot. Mm-hmm. And I like the genesis of her character and what she's going to be.
As far as origins and stuff go for Catwoman, this kind of is and kind of isn't her origin. I think they did a great job. And you're right. It really shows how she could grow into the character she becomes. And as far as backstory and stuff goes, this fits. This makes sense. It works really well. And I think a lot of my feelings towards this and a few of the other issues with the 0 year has less to do with the particular issues than the 0 year marketing event. And I want to be clear on the marketing side of it than anything else. It's cool to see all these characters back at this time, how they're kind of intersecting and whatnot. But this was another issue that hit some of the same basic story points as other 0 year tie-in issues.
Yeah. Yeah, there was some panels that could have been lifted from the Batgirl issue, and you know, with the run on food and the fact that everybody's scrambling at the same time, and so there was some very similar tropes they were hitting.
Yeah, well, and another one of the tropes is the I don't say coincidental or ironic, but the chance meeting with somebody who will be a big player in their life later.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In this case, it was Clayface and Penguin and such. And again, not a bad thing to have had happen. But when I'm seeing these same story points hit in so many different comics I'm reading this month, it kind of weakens my or lessens my feeling on those. And it's got nothing to do with the issue in particular so much as the similarity between the issues. And it's funny because this is not the first time I think the Batman editorial office has had this sort of a problem. I think Death of the Family had similar things where too many of the issues had too many of the same story beats. So it's like, wow, how are they not seeing that? Yet I also see at times some of the stuff coming out of the same editorial office, the brilliant use of backup features and matching of the artist between the lead and the backup in Batman Detective and some of the other books, that I'm really getting mixed feelings as to the quality of stuff coming out of the Batman editorial office at DC right now.
Yeah, and historically, this book has been uneven, and I have liked very few issues of this. So this is one of my favorite Catwoman issues of the entire run.
I can totally see that,
and I've probably read more than half. So I'm sure I'm in the 12 to 15 issue range of Catwoman's current New 52 run. And yeah, this is by far my favorite.
I think the art by Aaron Lopresti certainly helps. I mean,
it's really great.
He's an amazing artist. I don't think this is like the pinnacle of his work or anything, but the impression I got is it didn't seem to be a story that I found particularly inspiring. And I would question if he did too. But he did a great job with it. He never disappoints as an artist. I've been following his career for ages, I think since around the time he started in the industry, and I've always been a fan of his. Great, great stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see how much of what we get out of these zero-year issues story-wise kind of matters in later issues, or if it was just, you know, told for the sake of telling it and to tie it in and to get a bump in the sales or something.
Well, I think if all 52 titles had zero-year issues, you know, we would probably be seeing a lot more clunkers than we are. But because they've kind of chosen some that make the most sense, I think they've all been pretty solid. And this one has been one of my favorites even. So I gave it a 4, a nice solid 4. And like I said, I wish John Layman was continuing on this title, because this is... I would be back on this book if that was the case.
I can see that. I can see that. I don't think we've had any clunkers in the zero-year stuff yet.
Right.
There have been a few where it's like, wow, that's wildly coincidental, or what are the chances of that happening?
Exactly.
Deals.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, okay, they're trying to shoehorn it into this particular time era and place in Batman's history. That's fine. And as individual stories go, they've usually been pretty good backstories that are conveniently revelatory in some way, shape, or form about the character and how they would grow into what they became. For me, this was, a high 3, I would say. It's a little bit better than average, but not noticeably so, I guess. Mm-hmm. Again, there are a few things that just kind of pushed some buttons with me. I've read just enough of I'm reading all of the zero-year stuff right now, and seeing enough of what feels, I don't want to say formulaic, but repetitive, story beat wise.
Flash was really solid also.
Flash was good, but it too seemed to hit the same basic story beats.
And I see exactly what you're saying with meeting the significant person on, you know, so many pages in, and there's the chance meeting. And that you're right. When you put them all together, it does seem like super coincidental.
But none of them individually are bad. I thought the Flash actually was really good. It's like, Does he need to be in Gotham City? No, but okay, I'll go with that. That's fine. I won't knock it for that or anything. But, you know, Iris also, okay, wait a sec, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But again, it's nice as a way to flesh out the backstory both of the lead characters in these stories and then the peripheral ones around them, and to get some history on some of the supporting cast. So, you know, I thought the Flash one was pretty good. The Green Lantern Corps one wasn't bad. Again, I don't think we've had a clunker yet.
Right, I agree.
But this one, you know, the cross-cutting in time, you know, didn't impress me much either. Again, three, strong three, favorable three or whatever, but I was really hoping they would have had stuff that was knocking it out of the park a little bit more than some of these. None of them have been bad. Right. All of them, I think, are worth reading, just not maybe in rapid succession.
You probably don't want to bundle them up and read them back to back. You're right, because then you'll see all the cracks and they will jump out at you. Yeah.
Well, sometimes that's just the sort of stuff that does jump out at me. The Doctor Who Prisoners in Time that we talked about, the early issues there were all, okay, have a solo adventure, his companions get kidnapped, you know, hit a couple of similar story beats, and it's like, wow, it's cool, I'm liking the issues, it's fun to see these doctors, but I'm also seeing the repetition and the formula. And anytime I'm seeing that aspect of the craft, it's taking me a little out of the story. And that's not good.
No.
Not crippling or horrible either, but it's not good. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Nova 10, or as they like to call it, Nova number 100. This is a $4.99 book. It's arguably one of their anniversary issues, although not the unbelievably gargantuan supersized issues they've done for Spider-Man, I guess Iron Man, Captain America, Hulk, and some of the others that have had, you know, the $7.99 or whatever type X-100 issue. How much of Nova and the previous various titles over the, you know, how many of the 100 issues have you read of Nova?
The last 10.
The last 10. Okay. That's good to know. What did you think of this one?
I loved it. I thought it was great. I think Zeb Wells just knocked it out of the park. It was so much fun. Just laughed. I just thought it was just really, really clever and fun. You know, the first 22 pages especially. Then you got all the extra covers, which I thought was nice to kind of glance back through the evolution of the book over time and all the different incarnations. I thought that was awesome. The Duggan story, I didn't like at all. And I was sorry to see that he's taken over the book. I don't really care for his Deadpool stuff. So that was kind of a bummer. But, you know, if I take it those first 22 pages and then stop, man, it was great. I loved it.
Well, it was interesting how it had, you know, the front story, the covers, the back story and such. And, you know, some of the other annuals have had other little filler stuff or whatever. What got me with the first one was they're showing how Nova's getting involved in one of these, you know, epic event sort of battles where, you know, Doom has gotten a hold of Thor's hammer and he is just wailing on everybody left, right and center. And it's up to Nova to save the day. And I'm like thinking, you know, it's a real shame that the X-Men and the Avengers don't have a few more titles so they could have shown us, I don't know, the lead up to this issue. Or maybe the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, or Scarlet Spider, or Hulk, Thor, Wolverine, you know, the other people who've been trounced. Because it was actually looking like, you know, that would have been a fun thing to see. And then as the thing goes on and we get more of the voice of Nova, which I think is a nice, fun, unique voice within the Marvel Universe right now, you know, I saw where they were going, and it's like, okay, I get it, that's cool, but it shows a level of creativity and some story ideas that were just kind of thrown out there for the sake of throwing out there that I think could have been really fun to explore deeper.
And maybe we'll get that battle in an upcoming issue.
That would be quite entertaining. Some of the stuff they did with the New Warriors, did you ever read any of the New Warriors stuff?
No.
Okay, because the previous Nova was a big deal with them. There was an aspect of this that felt like a certain amount of setting up some chess pieces and moving that around to it's like, okay, let's get him involved with the New Warriors, which I think they did very effectively. There was also an aspect of some character building, some let's do some stuff with his supporting cast, and this is a book where we actually have a supporting cast. I think there are a lot of other books out there that really don't. So I think a lot of what they set up and did in that first storyline, like you said, really great stuff, very interesting, great, great use of the Watcher. And, you know, I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts was the being a member of the Avengers or being a member of the what is the group?
The New Warriors.
New Warriors. And he was the Watcher kind of showed him Big Fish in Little Pond or Super Little Guppy in Big Pond. And I thought that was really super clever and great, and it worked really well. I just think this was so much fun, and yeah, the Watcher was used super effectively, like the best I've seen him. Well, and
Sam's interaction with the Watcher, and just this is a kid. This is not a young adult. This is a kid.
Yeah,
you know, as Nova, and I think you know, this writer has really captured that youthfulness, that voice. Mm-hmm. You know, Zibwell's just knocked it out of the park in that respect, and that's something that I don't know that the title has done as effectively throughout its 10-issue run. But there have been times, certainly it has, other times not so much.
Yeah, and I really like the Jeff Loeb issues early on as well. I thought those were solid. And so this has had a really good creative team at the helm, these 10 issues. And I've got a very short leash with the Duggan stuff. I'm going to try it, but I'm going to stick around. If it's Deadpoolian, I'm not going to stick around.
If this second story is representative of the storytelling style, I am going to be frustrated.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll probably keep going with it. And there were aspects of it that I liked. Some of the characterization stuff, the bit with the Morse code and a few things like that. Okay, that's good. That's character building. It shows some insight. It gives us some, you know, revelations and you know, about the character and whatnot. But, you know, I'm reading the whole thing thinking, okay, you know, I kind of see where it's sort of going or whatever. And then you get that last page. And I don't want to say what's on that last page. It's definitely a spoiler. But I don't think the story led up to that last page.
No.
It's just, bam, that happens.
It just comes out of nowhere. And so that's what's going to be occupying the next couple of issues going forward. And I don't know if I want to read that story.
I don't know if I want to read that story. And if the story is told where we get a bunch of stuff and then, you know, out of the blue, X happens or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's frustrating. And it undercut the earlier part of this story, which had nothing to do with its conclusion, and made it feel a little like a filler kind of a story in some respects, even though it wasn't. We got some great insight into the character. But I almost left the issue feeling like it was two breather or filler issues slammed together or something, and that's not what this issue really is.
No. Yeah, if this was a $3.99 book or a $2.99 book, 22 pages, and they threw those covers, the 100 covers on the end, I would have given this a 5. But to be a $4.99 book and then the extra pages, you're getting a story that I didn't love. So I've got to downgrade. I still enjoyed the first story so much, and love that writing and love that style and that fun aspect of the story, that I'm still going to give this a 4.
Okay.
I still had a lot of fun with this.
I agree entirely that the first story is the highlight of it, and very well done. I left the issue underwhelmed, frustrated, and annoyed. And a lot of that, if not the majority of it, was due to the way that second story ended.
Yeah.
And
that's not good. That's not good.
Not
when you're handing off the baton to the next creative team, and you've got the bump in readership from this anniversary issue. You've got a captive audience, and okay, here's Zeb, and he's handing it off to the new guy, and clunk.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was, a clunk. As interested as I was seeing where the character's going and stuff, it really killed some of that enthusiasm from that second story. So to me, high 3, but I can't really justify giving it that 4. It's something, though, if you're a fan of Nova, certainly worth picking up. They're doing some fun stuff. He's an interesting character and a unique one within the Marvel Universe. I'm glad they've got him and they're using him. But I would have had problems with that second story regardless of what character it was. It's just the way it was told. To me, that's as much on the editor as the writer. So a little frustrating there.
Yeah.
So shall we move on to our other book for the week?
Yeah, sounds good.
This is Letter 44 from Oni Press. Now, I had seen the first issue listed in previews and said, okay, at that point, I'm not sure if I'd read anything from Oni Press, but the concept sounded interesting of a newly elected president getting, on his first day, a letter from his predecessor basically saying, you know, there's this one little thing you really need to know. They're aliens. They're building some structure out, you know, in the far side of our solar system. And I've been doing all these things because of. So, you know, it's been super top secret. Nobody else knows. And you're going to have to pick up the pieces on this. Surprise. Cool concept. Wasn't sure where it was going to go. Liked the first issue a lot. And I think they've done some great stuff here in the second issue. And it's... I was just amazed how much story was in these in between these covers. I mean, there's still a lot of questions to answer, but in addition to getting a lot of good stuff in the first issue and setting up things, I felt like the story really moved forward quite a bit in this issue. Things were being revealed, more questions being posed, and a few, hey, wait a sec, tossed in there. And I think if they can kind of keep up that pace of strong forward movement, something's getting answered, new questions getting layered in, and kind of continually moving that story forward, this should be a very satisfying read for quite some time. What are your thoughts on it?
Issue one blew me away. It was great. I would have given it 5. I like this. I still like this number 2, but not as much. Mm-hmm. It introduced some more characters that, especially on the ship, that we didn't see before. Mm-hmm. We got a little bit of the president, but my favorite parts of issue one were the stuff with the president, and we didn't get as much in this issue.
That's fair.
It was nice to see them cross over, and we get to see a little bit more of that ship. Like I said, I enjoyed seeing some of these astronauts that are on the ship and getting to know them a little bit more. There's some reveals here that I thought were I don't really get, and I guess I can wait for the clarity, but it just seemed kind of odd, just some odd reveals for some of the characters on the ship. And I'll stick around and find out, but it just seemed weird. And so I'm hopeful that there's a nice payoff for that stuff. I'm excited about discovering the mysteries that are going on out of range, where behind this asteroid belt and with these aliens. Really psyched to see. I really like the stuff with the president and him discovering all these secrets, and what's he doing with that knowledge. And I think this is, you know, Charles Soule at his best. He's doing a great job. The Albuquerque art is really solid. I like all of it. The characters are, you know, very distinct, different, and this was a good comic.
Yeah, it is. I think your point about the president's storyline versus the astronaut storyline. This is a book that, because of the two very distinct locations, you know, Earthbound and Spacebound, and the at times the strong disconnect between them. I can definitely see people liking one side better than the other and getting a little frustrated if the other side's getting more of the spotlight. But I think that's nature of the beast given the structure of the story. And it's going to be interesting to see if they can balance moving things ahead, planting more story seeds, more questions, answering others without it seeming like a never-ending rat race or getting frustrating.
Yeah, I think in future issues, they just need to pick a side and do one side or the other, a la Astro City, you know? Just tell this person's story for an issue and move the story forward that way, and don't bounce back and forth as much, because I don't think you can do it justice splitting it in half like that as well as, you know, because the first issue was pretty much 80-20 president to to spaceship, and that worked. And so kind of this flipping the other way, I don't know if it was as effective, but it's still good and interesting, and there's enough mystery that I care about and enough characters that I want to see succeed that I'm coming back to check it out.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me a little of the Defying Gravity television show that lasted, I don't know, half a season or whatever on ABC, I think back in 2009. And mm-hmm. It was one of those where, you know, you've just launched a bunch of astronauts into space and there's really a secret mission that they're going on that they find out about afterwards when they're up there. So you had the dichotomy of what's going on back on Earth, what's going on the space stuff. Very different stories, but have some broad similarities and whatnot. And it makes me think that this is the kind of thing, depending, you know, what direction it goes, could make for a very interesting television show. You know, you'd get the people who are into more the West Wing, sort of, you know, what's going on with the president stuff, and those who it's like, oh, what's going on the space side? And again, if they can do that balance well moving forward, I think it's something that would work equally well in live action format.
Yeah, I can see that. It's too bad they can't all be a dollar. But this one was back to $3.99, mm-hmm. and so it's not four times as good as the first issue, but it was still solid. So I liked, like I said, I liked so much of it that I want to keep reading. So I gave it a 4.
Cool.
I gave 4 is all across the board today for me.
Well, for you, not so much for me. I gave this one a 4 too. It was really good. You're mentioning of the price point on the first issue, which was a dollar. That was certainly a lot of what talked me into getting it. It's one of those, how can I turn that down? You know, it's
mm-hmm. That was 100% of the reason I got this.
Totally makes sense. Yeah. And I think it's smart for publishers to do that, because if I hadn't gotten that first issue, I certainly would not have gotten the second.
Right.
And as it was, yeah, this is four times as expensive. But frankly, not that I didn't notice, but I didn't really care.
Right.
Obviously, if they do another four times price increase, I'm off the book. But
if number 3 is $16, we're going to have it's really going to have to be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a little longer even. But again, I do like it when they kind of put their backing behind it and make it easy to try out a new book. So it's good stuff. This was a large week for me. I had in my box, I think, 56 items. That included previews in the Bleeding Cool magazine, so I think that was about 54 comics. I have had bigger, and looking at what's coming out next week, and particularly the week after, I will have bigger, I think, in 2 weeks. But man, there was a ton of great stuff this time around.
And it was so much good stuff. This was a great week.
We had... let's see, what was some of the highlights? Again, it's hard to pick some highlights out of a really strong week.
Well, like I said, I really liked the Flash Zero Year. I thought that was great and well done.
It was one of my favorite Flash issues, actually, so far.
Yeah.
Again, it, like I said, had some similarities to other stories and some wild coincidences, but it was a strong, good story and really showed Barry Allen very well.
I think maybe me and just a handful of other people are still reading Larfleeze and enjoying it.
I'm one of those others.
I really like this book. I think it's fun, and I don't know what happened, where everybody went, but it's down in single digits now, isn't it?
I would have to actually pull up that, but I'm sure it's one of those that I think is a little bit of a I don't say a niche market, but yeah, it's not going to click with everybody. And I get that. I understand that, but it is a little unfortunate. Let me,
it hasn't been announced that it's canceled, but I am surprised. Cause it's down, but even as low as Green Team, which has already been canceled. So I'm surprised it's still around.
Actually, Larfleeze number 4 was at 18,062. Whereas Green Team was
Larfleeze is still selling in the high teens.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Green Team is 6,318. I'm looking at the October data. I don't have the November data stuff. Although, about the time this episode goes up, that will have started to come out.
So, yeah, below 20. That's no good. Yeah.
There's like it's doing like three times as well as the Green Team. Not quite, but almost. But it is certainly entering that danger zone, and if it does not turn around quickly, and frankly, I see no major reason it would, I think it's certainly not long for this world.
Mm-hmm.
I would seriously question its life expectancy, given the fact that Red Lanterns, which is selling 31,000-ish, is doing a flip book issue with Green Lantern, presumably an attempt to bolster its sales.
Okay.
So if they're doing that for a book over 30,000, you got to wonder what they're going to do with a book at the 18,000 range.
Another DC book that was a pleasant surprise for me was Dark Knight 25. I had not been enjoying the Hurwitz run on this. And I thought this issue, even though it was yet another Clayface issue, was really good. I really liked the Alex Maleev art in it, and I was really happy with this. And it was probably one of my favorite Dark Knights in quite a while. And keep it up, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it was a good issue. It does seem like Clayface has gotten so much focus this year as to be just staggering.
Yeah.
He's an interesting enough character, but it'd be better to have spaced that out a little bit more.
Yeah. We got a Hawkeye relatively on time and maybe even a little early with number 14. No Aha on this, but I think it's Annie Wu that did the art, and it was fine. This is a more of a Kate-centric issue.
Mm-hmm.
No Clint. And it was fun. It was very reminiscent of the annual. So if you liked the annual, you'd like this.
It was good. Very enjoyable. I liked it a lot.
Of course, Saga 16, I'm sure I loved it more than you liked it.
Probably. I don't dislike it, but there's so many people that are just going nuts over this. And I'm like, you know, it's good, but I'm not one of those going nuts over it. Which, you know, hey, that's fine. Different things, different people, that's cool.
This is one of my favorite issues of this run, and it's just brilliant. I love and Fiona Staples art in this. I'm loving Brian K. Vaughan's writing. It's been a real pleasure to read and love this issue.
Well, it's one of the top selling Image books, so a lot of people are liking it a lot, and it's outselling a lot of, you know, Marvel and DC books. So,
yeah,
and I can totally see why. You know, I still think the Private Eye. Brian K. Vaughan is doing, to me, just that.
That's good stuff.
That's amazing.
Black Science was a Rick Remender, Mateo Scalera debut, issue mm-hmm. one. I was over on Image as well. You know, it didn't do it for me. It didn't really click. Did you get a chance to pick that up?
Well, I had a chance, but I chose not to.
Yeah, I think that was probably the right move.
The concept didn't particularly, you know, light my fire or whatever. I think Rick Remender can be a good writer, but he's not one that I think, wow, I've just got to read most of what he does.
Yeah, it was kind of like a Star Trek landing party,
mm-hmm.
And then stuff happens, and then crazy monsters and things like that. And I mean, that could work, and that has potential. But this first issue, I thought was pretty convoluted and not that great.
Mm.
But another Image book that I did love was Rat Queens number 3.
Okay.
And this book just continues to improve. Rock Up Church is he's great. His art is fantastic. He's doing such a good job. He's so inventive with the stuff that he's doing. Curtis Wiebe is doing a really good job of writing. I'm enjoying the story so much. You know, it makes me want to dig out my Dungeon Master's guide and 20 sided dies and go to play D&D again. And I know they're around here somewhere, and and that's saying something to kind of harken back to that type of storytelling. That really, really good stuff. And
cool.
I've really been enjoying it.
Speaking of Image, last week you had mentioned a Voice in the Dark. So after we recorded, I hopped onto the Image press site, downloaded the issue, read it, completely blown away.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah.
Amazing stuff. The amount of story that was in there. I see what you mean about the I don't say ambiguity, but the gender, or not the gender, the ethnicity being...
Mm-hmm.
Not crystal clear, whatever. It's like, okay, that one seems Asian. That one seems, you know, African-American, but it's not like, you know, it's a little harder to tell.
And it was nice that, you know, the author reached out and did mention that, hey, I am in fact a, a man. And so I have hat in hand and apologize to Laramie. And he writes women really well. He writes those female characters so well that I just assumed he was a woman.
There was
it's really great
in the writing that made me think, well, Jesus, this person just doesn't have a grasp on X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times where it's like, well, somebody just has never been on that side of the fence or know somebody on that side of the fence. I mean, occasionally you'll see an artist who has clearly never really been around babies much or something like that because they're out of whack or whatever. But yeah, I was Voice in the Dark, the art, the story, everything, very impressive, very curious where that goes.
And a lot of book for a little bit of money. So
it just kept going. You know, I was very pleased with that, very amazed. So definitely give that a recommendation too. So thanks for mentioning that last week.
I'll do a little research on these creators next time, maybe.
Again, we apologize for getting his gender wrong. Given how often I probably butcher names and such, I apologize for that stuff too. You know, it's sometimes when all you've got to go on is a name, you can guess about some stuff, be it, you know, what part of the world they're in, stuff like that, and you could be wildly wrong.
Well, he was awesome about it. You know, he wasn't mad or anything. So, Revival 15 was it was good. This thing, it just seems like it's kind of treading water in some issues, you know.
And I don't know because I don't read that.
Oh, you don't read this one. Okay.
Now I'm going on the assumption it would have more of a, I don't know, gore factor or darker story aspect to it than I would.
Yeah, it has the touches. It has the gory touches.
Because that's Norton's on that, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of Mike Norton. He's a amazing creator and such. Mm-hmm. I love his art and whatnot. So that's one that at some point I may sample, but I have not done so yet.
Well, you know, Image does the trades pretty reasonably, so you can get a good sense with those first four or five issues that are collected, if you want to go that route. I really like the world that he's built, but it's such a big world, and it's tough to, I guess, to track everything that's going on and from issue to issue. And sometimes I kind of lose the momentum. I'm like, okay, wait a minute, who is this again? Because we haven't seen this person for a while. Oh, okay. And you got to kind of catch up.
I think that's the challenge for creators is to get a very realistic feeling world. I mean, you wind up adding a lot of stuff to it, having a lot of characters floating through it. And then how do you keep enough of that in play without it seeming just chaotic, super busy and crowded? And not having characters be absent for so long and then suddenly they're back and it's like, oh, I had totally forgotten about character so-and-so or whatever. It's a really interesting balancing act, and I see the same thing sometimes on TV shows. And some creators can do it very well, some not so much. You know, so I can definitely see where the size of the world and whatnot is potentially as much, I don't say a detractor, but a challenge for the creators as a benefit and bonus for the readers.
Mm-hmm. Spirit 22 was kind of a ramp up, I guess, to next issue. Mm-hmm. It seemed to be a lot of setup, and like the next issue seems like it'll be a little more action packed and exciting. I got that sense. It was still good, though. I mean, you can't go wrong with Superiors normally.
No, I would agree with all of that. They've done some great stuff in that title. Again, the amount of story they've managed to pull out of the Doc Ock as Spider-Man, you know, is amazing. And this was, you know, just more of that. And I think you're right. It's going to really kick into high gear, you know, next issue, and kind of see where that leaves.
And Walking Dead 117, we get the next chapter in All Out War and just picked right up and slammed it home. It's really good. And this accelerated schedule is fantastic.
So, yeah, I'm glad they're getting it out faster. I think The Walking Dead has always had very strong story momentum, even when it's had some unfortunate delays early on. But it's the kind of book that I think really benefits from just keeping the thing coming out, and I'm glad he's able to do this kind of a pace.
Yeah, when we're getting a different side of Negan, some different aspects of his personality, which is weird. I mean, I don't know if I completely buy it exactly, but yeah, he's got some. I don't know what his game is exactly. I don't know what his game plan is, and I think that's probably what Kirkman wants, you to not kind of have him pinned in a box. And it's really fun, and it really works well with the show. And you know, you just go back and forth. You know, comics are out, go back and watch the show the next week, and really just build up upon each other, even though they don't completely tie in, of course. But
it's nice they're complementary to each other.
Yeah, they are, and it's really a lot of fun.
Cool.
Anything else you've been reading that stuck out?
Let's see. Tom Strong, Planet Apparel. That's always great stuff. Really enjoying that. We got another issue of Thunder Agents, which I'm liking, enjoying quite a bit, but think they could either pick up the pace a little, or it has a few shortcomings. I'm liking it. It's good, but I can see where other people may have gotten tired and gotten off it. Read the first issue of Never Ending, 3-issue miniseries. Heavy on setup, particularly for 3-issue miniseries. Very curious to see how that goes, where that goes, but would have liked for that to have gotten a little bit further into the story in the first issue. Really liking what they're doing in Captain Midnight. That's some fun stuff. And we got the final issue of Avengers Arena. That was interesting.
What's that lead? That's kicking into something else, I'm assuming?
Avengers Undercover, I believe, by a different creative team.
Okay.
But very clearly kind of continuing some of the threads from this.
And whoever's left from that series would just start into this new series?
Yeah.
You probably can't tell me if it was like a construct of Arcade, or what, did it really happen? The deaths really happen? Can you tell me? Can you tell me and all our thousands of listeners?
It was not a dream sequence.
Okay.
With any story of this sort, there's going to be a few fakeouts here and there of varying degrees and whatnot. But there was a part of me that at the beginning was thinking the whole thing is just make-believe. They're going to all wake up out of their stasis pods and be done. That did not happen.
Okay. Well, that's good. They didn't cheat then.
No. It is Arcade. There were a few cheats here and there, but, I mean, within line of that character.
Yeah.
Okay. The whole thing wasn't a fake-out, which I appreciated. All New X-Men, still really enjoying that title. They're doing some fun stuff there. I was skeptical of that when that one started, too. But, I mean, Marvel's really pulled out some great stuff. You know, DC is, again, doing some interesting things. We got another issue of The Green Team. I think we've got maybe 2-3 left or whatever. Which, again, not too surprising given how well it's not selling.
Don't tell me that's picking up. Are you enjoying that?
I'm liking it for what it is. I am still amazed they published it to begin with.
Yeah.
But it's one of those that I like the fact that they're reaching out and trying different things. And I think there's enough stuff in the DC library that they could, I don't say dust off and do new versions of, but, you know, put out there.
Mm-hmm.
That if they don't have, if every editor there doesn't have a laundry list of at least a half a dozen things that they could move forward with, I'd be surprised and disappointed. And I mean a half a dozen unique things, you know, if they were to coordinate with the other editors and stuff.
Right.
There's just so many characters and whatnot. And again, the Green Team that were in part of one issue of one book, not what I would have picked, but okay. It's gotten a longer run than few things in the past have. Got the final issue of Superior Carnage. Was a little surprised with where that left off. But, you know, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't with some of these things. You don't want to have a the end, that's it, it's final, it's over, it's done, nothing more to be seen here kind of a deal. You don't want to have a continued next month in either.
Right.
There's, you know, in a shared universe, some books that have a little bit of, again, that chess piece moving aspect of we need to get character A from where they're at to where we need them to be. And there was a little bit of that in here. But I think the Superior Spider Office over at Marvel seems to have a game plan in mind and seems to be executing on it very well. I don't think this was a serious misstep, but it was also not something that was just a strong, solid, oh my gosh, compared to Superior Spider-Man, which is, compared to Superior Foes and stuff like that.
You know, team-up isn't working for me, though.
Yeah, team-up, I don't think has, I don't think it was as good of a game plan for that as the other books.
Yeah.
But again, with what they're doing with Superior Spider-Man, I think that's a tough act to follow.
Oh, yeah. With the 1-2 punch of the Superior book and Foes, I mean, those are really super solid. So,
yeah.
The Massive 17 came out as well. I forgot about that. It's a Dark Horse comic Brian Woods doing, mm-hmm. kind of an environmental kind of thriller type thing. And what they do with this book, which this is, this 17 was part 2 of 3. They break them up into 3-issue story arcs. So you have to kind of pick up at the beginning. So you know, 1, 2, 3, you're good, and then 4, 5, 6. And it's just been really great. Really great writing, really engaging stuff. And I don't think that a lot of people are reading The Massive right now. But between that and his Star Wars title, he's doing great work over there at Dark Horse, man.
I think he's an underrated writer, because I know some of his stuff, DMZ at DC in particular, sells a lot better than the monthly sales numbers would indicate. Often the year-end numbers have revealed that, you know, a half or two-thirds of the sales of the DMZ trades have gone, you know, below the radar all year. So I think that there is a definite audience for his work, and bigger than, you know, the sales on some of his books may indicate on a monthly basis. He knows what he's doing. He's a solid writer.
Very prolific, too. He's got a lot of stuff going on at the same time.
Well, and he's been around for, you know, quite a while, so it's not like he's just now, you know, getting a lot of work. He's been doing mm-hmm. a number of titles for many, 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 many years. So, good to see him continuing to have success.
But again, great week. Lots great of good week. Comics.
Big week. Again, I got over 50, I think 54 or so comics or whatnot. Ton of stuff coming out. If you're not finding stuff you're really excited about and really enjoying, look harder, because it's out there.
If you're not, then you should listen to the previews episode of Comic Book Page that'll be out probably sometime after this, right?
It'll be the next episode up. It'll be on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Now, you haven't had a chance to listen to this because we're recording this on Thursday, and this will go up on Monday, but this past Friday, the day after we're recording this, Drew, the episode that goes up is the Retailer Spotlight on DCBS.
Oh, cool.
I had a really great conversation with Christina from DCBS, talking about their company, kind of what plans they've got moving forward, some of their history and whatnot. Great, fun conversation. I found it to be probably one of the most enjoyable interviews and stuff I've done. And I mean, I knew quite a bit about DCBS going in, because I've been shopping with them for 10 years. I learned a lot of new stuff, and I'm very excited about some of their growth plans they've got coming forward.
Yeah, they're going to have a brick and mortar. They already have a brick and mortar.
They've had one for at least 4 years, I believe, yeah. They said. I'm trying to remember if I wrote that part down. They've got plans. They're moving to a new location, which is, I think they said 31,000 square feet or something. I mean, it sounded amazing.
Still in Indiana?
Still in Indiana. That's the one downside. I have not talked them into moving to Austin, Texas, where I'm at. Which is probably just as well, because I was learning a lot about their employees, and a lot of their employees are very well read, it sounds like, which I think is awesome. And I have a feeling, were I to shop at the physical store on a regular basis, I would get recommendations. If I get recommendations, I get new things on my pull list. If I get new things,
you're in trouble.
I had that at one point in San Diego. A guy named Joe was working at Comic Gallery. He and I hit it off. He's a great guy. He was incredibly well read. Young kid too. Young guy. And his ability to match what was out on the rack to my tastes was impeccable. and the number of new titles I picked up because of that was substantial.
You know, there's not a lot of comic guys that do that.
There's not. It's a tough thing to do. Yeah. And again, that's part of why I do the preview spotlight. I think it's important to do, again, kind of the democratic send in clips. You know, let other people say what they're excited about. Because I know what I like, but one of the things I almost dread doing at times is making recommendations. Because to do that well, you really need to know what the person you're recommending to likes, why they like it, what they, you know, both do and don't like, and what other books can fill those needs, desires, interests. And that's not easy to do. And I've shopped at stores. I've known people that, you know, hey, you know, recommend me a book. Because sometimes, just because I am cruel, I guess, I'll go into a comic shop and you know, recommend me something I'm not reading. Well, what about? And 9 times out of 10, they're going to hit a Marvel, a DC, or an Image book or something like that. That I'm already reading, because I mean that's going to be, you know, I'm reading the majority of the top 100 and a decent amount below that too. So I always find it interesting when I get a recommendation and they haven't asked at all what I'm already reading. And it's clear they're going on, well, I like this, therefore.
Yeah.
Good place to start, but I'm not asking what I should be buying you know?
I wasn't asking for gift giving ideas.
Exactly. But yeah, I think if I were to shop at the physical DCBS store, my wallet would be that much emptier. But they have plans afoot to drain it even further. So
yeah, I get over to Indiana every so often. My dad lives there, so I might have to make a road trip.
They are planning on opening up the new location. I think they said around June next year. And if it goes the way she was saying it might, with a big to-do and whatnot, I may make it down there for that.
Nice.
Because I'd like to go see their store in person at least once.
Yeah.
I didn't get to meet them, Cameron and Christina, until this year at San Diego. And again, shopping with them for 10 years. And one thing I do want to point out here, I didn't point it out on that episode, they sponsor a ton of podcasts. They do not sponsor Comic Book Page. And the reason for that is I'm paying for this out of pocket because I enjoy comics. I enjoy talking about comics. They have offered. I'm sure if I said, hey, would you, they would, but they don't. And I point that out for the sole reason that when I gush about them as they're amazing, they're a great retailer, you should go buy from them, deal with them, etc., I want it to be clear I'm not saying any of that because I'm getting any kind of a kickback or anything of the sort. I have been an amazingly happy customer with them for 10 years. I don't know that I have stayed with any comic book store, physical one, for 10 years. And I'm easy to please. I'm also a little easy to cheese off at times. And they have pleased me wonderfully. I think they're, again, just well worth doing. And I want to be clear that, again, I'm saying that because that's what I feel, not because of any kind of endorsement or sponsorship or anything of the sort.
And I have not been sponsored by Miller Lite, but I can wholeheartedly recommend that beverage if you are in the mood for a light beer.
Okay.
But if they want to send me a check.
Well, it's one of those things that I think it's great that they sponsor a lot of podcasts, and I'd rather see that money go to the ones that may be in more need of it and stuff. I'm at a point in my career where I can afford to do this stuff, and it's not a big deal. I know there are some college-age people doing podcasting and stuff. Money's a lot tighter for them, and the sponsorship, I think, is more beneficial to go to them. But it's one of those things that I've listened to some other podcasts in the past, I will not name names, where it seemed at times some of what they were saying was a direct result of having been sponsored and not kind of from the heart and with the honesty and integrity that to me would have meant more.
Tons of them. There's tons of them like that.
And I totally get it. That's part of why I decided not to do sponsorships is I think subconsciously or to some degree, I might have fallen victim to that too. I'm human. I admit that. But, you know, this way I can say whatever I want pretty much whenever, you know, or however I want with impunity and not worry, oh, gee, am I going to lose a sponsor? How's that going to impact something or whatever? But, you know, again, I've dealt with DCBS for 10 years as a customer. They've graciously allowed me to make picks every month for the preview spotlight, which they then discount a little bit further. That's something that all the listeners, of course, really all their customers benefit from. And I mean, they're just, yeah, amazing. So really enjoyed talking with Christina for that episode. A lot of fun.
Yeah. Another thing is we do have our best of 2013 episode coming up at the end of the year. That's by the time this goes up, it'll probably be 3 or 4 weeks away. There's a thread on the forum where you can also make your recommendations for the best of the year, the best of 2013 in a variety of categories. We haven't broken down kind of like we do the weekly comic spotlight. It's in DC, Marvel, other, and we're going to be talking about the best series, the best new series, best single issue, best story arc and miniseries, the best writer, the best artist, and rising star in those three categories, those three publisher categories. And then we were also going to do a couple of special awards, best digital first or digital only comic of the year, best event of the year, and our publishers to watch. And we've already had some listeners already post their votes for what they should be, and there's been some good stuff, so we'll be able to talk about those their submissions as well. And so I'd love to see what everybody has to say and see how close we are or how far apart.
I definitely would love to see what everyone has to say, because frankly I find these sorts of things really challenging. And when we say best of, really it comes down to what's your favorite, what's our favorite, that kind of stuff. It's not like we're
it's you know, arbiters of
quality or something, you know. It's not like it's empirical evidence, but I read a ton of stuff, and it's hard for me sometimes. I mean, there could be something that I was just gushing over at the beginning of the year, and it's not that I don't feel that way about it anymore, it's that I haven't thought about it since it came out at the beginning of the year or something. So I find these sorts of episodes really challenging to do justice to and to do fairness to, because it's easy to bias towards the more recent. And I think it's been a really solid year for comics. I think Marvel's done some great stuff. DC's done some great stuff. Image has really grown leaps and bounds. And they were already very strong. So I definitely love seeing what other people do. Just so it's like, oh yeah, I'd forgotten about that. I should think about that. And there have been a couple of times in the past where, you know, I had really seriously just totally spaced on something. It's like, wow, no, that was what I should have picked or whatever, you know. So please go to the forum, comment in on that, and just, you know, give your thoughts as to what's really worked for you in 2013 for comics.
Yeah, I saw that Time magazine named Sex Criminals the top comic of 2013, and it's just had its third issue. And I thought, well, man, I mean, you kind of evaluated the whole year?
Yeah, I saw that and was surprised, and I think there was a certain aspect of, you know, I was wondering how much of that was due to, well, you know, Apple censoring it a little bit, you know, and kind of push back on that or something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty risque.
I'm not saying it's bad or anything of the sort. I don't know that best of the year applies for that either.
And, you know, for me, it's three issues in. I mean,
it's young.
That's not a full body of work to evaluate, really.
I've read a couple of series where the first issue just blew me away. The second was good. The third was okay.
Yeah, and then we're done.
Yeah, and it's easy for the shiny newness to wear off really quick. Other times, it just keeps going. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Man, that'll do it.
Cool. Join us next week for Swamp Thing number 26 from DC, Avengers Annual 2013 number 1 from Marvel, and Velvet number 2 from Image Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.